time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello everybody and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up to the Saturday morning sun, plop down the living room floor, big bowl of sugary cereal, and we'll try your favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And this morning, to bring our 100th episode back full circle, we watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2012.
Yay, cowabunga, I mean.
Yeah, no, Booyakasha.
Booyakasha, why? Why are they saying Booyakasha? I don't like it.
I guess it's the, is it the new, see, that's weird, because like cowabunga, I feel like I had heard before.
Yeah.
And it was a thing, but I've never heard Booyakasha in any sense.
Yeah.
Except for this Ninja Turtle show. Are they trying to make a word, or is it already a word?
They might be trying to make it cool. At least they're not going lit, bro. Like,
oh my god, that would be terrible.
What if they were doing the like thing where the turtles, instead of like giving like thumbs up or something like that, they were doing the thing where they like put their head down and raise their arms to the side?
Oh, like what is that called? Like
I don't remember. I'm not cool either. Enough to know that.
Yeah, I'm not part of that hip crowd.
Yeah, I'm not cool.
I wonder, do they fist bump? I wonder, like three finger fist bump.
I'm sure they do. That sounds sexual.
Lava Jesus.
Yeah, it's already happened. I already jumped the shark for the episode.
So the show Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the current one, it started in 2012, and like I said, it's still going. Created and developed initially by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, of course. And this particular show was developed by Ciro Neely, Joshua Sternin, and J.R. Ventimiglia. Produced by Lobar Productions, Mirage Studios, and Nickelodeon Animation Studios. It's so far run for 5 seasons, 114 episodes as far as this podcast goes, on the Nickelodeon Network. And for a short synopsis, if you don't already know, 4 Ninja Turtles, mutated by a mysterious alien substance, must rise up out of the sewers and defend their city against evil forces from both the past and the present. So here are some of the actors who played in this show.
So the voice of Leonardo was Jason Biggs for the first couple seasons. Jason Biggs, you might know him from acting in American Pie and Orange is the New Black. That role was then taken over by Seth Green, who you may know from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Austin Powers, Family Guy, and Robot Chicken. The voice of Donatello was Rob Paulsen, who in the original 1980s Ninja Turtles show was Raphael. And he's also been in about half of the other cartoons we've covered. The last one that we saw him in was Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs as the titular character, Saber Rider. The voice of Raphael was Sean Astin, who acted in The Goonies, and he was in Lord of the Rings as Samwise Gamgee. Dropping no eaves, sir, honest. So Michelangelo is voiced by Greg Sipes, who is the voice of Beast Boy in pretty much all iterations of Teen Titans, and also the voice of Kevin in all iterations of Ben 10. The voice of Splinter was Hoon Lee, who played Job in Banshee, and Dr. Park in Outcast. If you haven't seen Outcast, Joseph, that is a show for you to watch, man. You're going to love it. I know you like the comics. Read, so.
Yeah, exactly.
The voice of April O'Neil was Mae Whitman, who's from Arrested Development. She was the voice of Katara from Avatar The Last Airbender, and she's in one of my favorite movies of all time, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Casey Jones was voiced by Josh Peck, who starred in the very aptly named Drake and Josh, and he was also Ray in The Mindy Project and Gerald in Grandfathered. The voice of the Shredder was Kevin Michael Richardson, who was the voice of Hephaestus in the Hercules series, Bishop in Wolverine and the X-Men, Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars The Clone Wars, and Bulkhead from Transformers Prime, and tons of others. Like, the list just goes on and on. This guy's very talented. He's in a lot of shows. One show that we have seen him in before was he was the voice of Kilowog from Green Lantern, the animated series. And finally, a voice of the Krang, Nolan North, who is a very famous voice actor in the video game industry. He's been in Team Fortress 2, the Assassin's Creed series as Desmond, the Uncharted series as Nathan Drake, Gears of War, the Arkham series as Penguin, Deadpool, and pretty much any Marvel game. He also voiced Cyclops and Wolverine in the X-Men and played Peter Hastings in the show Pretty Little Liars.
So for a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Ninja Turtles cereal, in the second season, the device that the turtles use to locate the ooze canisters is a modified original Nintendo Game Boy. Furthermore, the tone used when this device is activated is the same used when an original Game Boy was switched on. So that's pretty cool. But there's so many pop culture references and things like that that there's probably a ton that we saw and may have missed.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
The ringtone for the Turtle Communicators is a MIDI-style version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1987 theme song.
Nice, yes.
Before Rob Paulsen agreed to take the role of Donatello, he first wanted to ensure that his co-star Barry Gordon, who voiced Donatello in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 87, was okay with it.
That's cool. Rob Paulsen's a stand-up guy, man.
Good guy. Good guy. So Renee Jacobs, who voiced April's mother in this series, previously provided the voice of April O'Neil in the original Ninja Turtles series from 87. So that's cool.
Oh, cool.
Little throwback.
I love when shows do that, when they bring in like some of the old cast to play, you know, like parents of something. I think that's a really awesome gesture.
Yeah. Oh, totally agree. According to Greg Sipes, you know, Michelangelo, who you just mentioned, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 87 was his favorite childhood cartoon, and it got him into doing martial arts, surfing, and meditation, and with Michelangelo being his favorite out of all the turtles. So that's like a dream come true to be able to voice act for one of your favorite childhood heroes. You know what
I
mean?
That is really cool, man. If one of these days I could voice Starscream, I'll be able to say I've made it.
Even if I can be in a show where I get killed by one of my favorite characters, I'll be happy.
Like, you could voice Yamcha for like 10 seconds and then die. And and then people won't even remember he was in the episode. But you'll know.
I'll know.
You'll know.
I was in this episode. I'll take it to my grave, too.
Yeah.
The Mighty Mutanimals are voiced by the voice actors from the 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle films. Dr. Rockwell was voiced by Frank Welker, who voiced Toka and Rezar.
Nice.
Slash is voiced by Corey Feldman, who voiced Donatello. Mondo Gecko is voiced by Robbie Rist, who voiced Michelangelo in the movies. So
that's cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's such a good nod to like all the fans and everything. And it's such a, like you wouldn't even know unless you did the research on it. But
the reason I even brought it up was because we do see the Mighty Mutanimals, which are some of my favorite characters from the old Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics.
Yeah.
So, and the current ones too. So it was awesome seeing them brought into this series. So do you have any memories of this show? I'm sure you had heard of it, but had you ever watched any of it?
I'd never watched it before. I just knew that it existed. And like the most exposure I've ever had to it was honestly like, I remember one time me and you and our friend Jim, who used to be on a different podcast with us, we got our picture taken with a guy dressed as Leonardo in that style once.
That's right.
At the Mall of America, we were like posing with Leonardo, and that's honestly as much exposure as I had. And the reason that I didn't watch the show is because I don't like the animation. And it's not so much the animation, it's more the character design that I don't like the turtles being really blocky. I didn't like it going in, and coming out, I still don't like it.
But yeah, it's kind of the same with me. I had watched some of it before and I really enjoyed it, but I hadn't kept up with it. So, and we've been watching so many cartoons here and there just randomly that I really haven't had time to have a show that I just keep up with.
Sure.
So, but now, I mean, after watching the episodes we did, I'm surprised at all the, you know, the cameos that were made and just how good the storytelling was or the writing. So I'm probably going to stick with it too, but I'll explain that further in a minute. So let's jump into the episodes we watched for today's show, which in this case is actually four episodes because, you know, 100th episode and Ninja Turtles was awesome. So, very first episode, highest rated episode, and finally, random listener chosen episode or episodes in this case. The order may vary depending on how these episodes fall chronologically, but of course, we have to start with the very first episode being Rise of the Turtles, season one, episode one and two. When Splinter allows his teenage sons, the Mutant Ninja Turtles, that's weird, the Mutant Ninja Turtles, to visit the surface for the first time, they discover that the surface world isn't as simple as it first appears.
So the first thing that I was thinking of going into this was, like I was just saying, I don't like how the turtles look. I'm not a huge fan of CG animations. Like, they have to be really good for me to really enjoy them. I think the story helped me here, though, because I think the story was good. The writing was good. The voice acting was good. The scenery, like the backgrounds and stuff, look amazing. Like, I'll give them that. They're gorgeous, especially the last episode we watched for this show just looked fantastic. But these first few episodes, I was really struggling with the look of everything because I just, like I said, I don't like the blocky turtle looking thing. I'm not a fan of that at all. Or one thing I did like, I liked the crack in Raphael's shell. I thought that was cool. That was a nice detail. that I really enjoyed, and it suits him. I'm not a fan of Donatello missing a tooth because I just thought it looked really goofy and childish.
Well, see, I don't feel like he's missing a tooth. I think it's a gap between his two teeth.
It was just so big, and it didn't look like it was right in the middle. So that's why I thought maybe he's missing a tooth or something. But I don't know. But like I said, I'm struggling a lot with the look of the show.
It was something that initially I was like, I don't know if I like this, but it's not something that took away for me. Like once I started to dig into the story, I really started enjoying it to the point where I'm like, I can forgive this. It's not my thing necessarily because I'm always going to be 2D animation over anything else. But right. I realize the limitations there are to that and are just the time and money that costs that comes with that. So I will sacrifice that for a good story, you know, any day, really.
I kind of came to grips with it. But like you, I would always opt for 2D over the 3D stuff just because I don't know. Like, I think 3D, it becomes dated very easily. Whereas 2D is almost like, you know, it's a style.
It's kind of ageless.
Yeah. Like years later, 2D is still going to look 2D. But 3D is something that keeps evolving.
Yeah, it's going to look like bad 3D after a while.
Yeah, that's why, like, if you go back and look at, if you're looking at, like, video games or something like that, like, the Super Nintendo games, let's just, as an example, those still look really good, right? Well, the N64 games, though some of those games, the gameplay may have been better, the graphics look awful. And at the time, they were great. And, you know, how many ever years later, we're like, oh, man, yeah.
Exactly.
Sharp-edged polygons, that's not great. So,
no.
Yeah, it's a trap that 3D falls into, and it's a reason I'm not a fan.
To compare it to a cartoon also, Beast Wars, if you look back at that.
Yes.
The CG in that, or even Reboot, like the CG in that is so like dated. Yeah. It's not bad for its time, but it's bad for this time. So like you said, it doesn't age well at all.
Oh yeah, at the time that stuff was cutting edge, and now it's just like, wow, that is real bad.
Yeah.
Like exactly. Kids make better looking stuff in Minecraft than some of those
exactly
cartoons,
so. No, so I know how you feel. Like I'm not saying like, oh, you're wrong for not liking this style. Yeah. I understand completely. It's not going to age great, but you know, it is what it is for now.
I did like though that the intro that they do, I enjoyed the, every once in a while they do like a splash page of a comic looking thing in the introduction. Mm-hmm. And that I really liked. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I like the intro song too. I thought it was really cool. Like a nice updated song.
Is like a new and hip crowd, man.
Yeah, exactly. Not that I'm part of the hip crowd, but I did appreciate the song.
Yeah.
Just to jump into the story a little bit, like I said, we're not going to go through the whole thing, but so we're starting out with the Ninja Turtles before they've even hit the streets yet. Like they've been training all these years for 15 years, I think, and it's Happy Mutation Day, which is the anniversary of the day that they were basically born from the mutagen. In this situation, like I know like Splinter has had all kinds of different origins depending on which show you're watching or which movie you're watching. In this one, he started as a man, and I guess he had been practicing martial arts, or he did practice martial arts and everything like that, and he was turned into a rat because he ran across this mutagen after he had bought some pet turtles, or he ran across like something going down, some kind of crime going down.
Yeah, it looked like the guys that we see in suits that we later find out are actually Krangs. It was hard to tell, but it looked like that's who he ran into is some of those.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. They were Utroms in the comics, but they're just Krangs in this, just to keep it simple.
And one thing I thought was weird is that we didn't see Krang himself really. So, and I mean, well, there's one episode where we do, but that's a special case. So I'm kind of wondering like, well, and I guess the way they unfolded it, that makes sense. But the Krang, as we know him, doesn't really exist in this universe.
Yeah, it's more Krang as a, they're almost like a collective, like a hive.
Right, it's like a race with like a hive mind sort of thing going on.
But there are ones that stand out like we see with Subprime, but we'll talk about that when we get there. One thing I liked about this, like when they're in there, so their lair is like, you know, the basic kind of sewer lair, but they've got some cool stuff like arcade machines and pinball machines, things like that, and a TV. And I loved the show that they were watching, the Space Heroes show.
Yeah, the one that Leonardo was watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime it cuts to TV in this series, it's great because those cartoons are hilarious. But in Space Heroes, like there's this one like ensign who's freaking out, I guess like a red shirt or something. And he's just like, we're all going to blow up in 2 seconds. And then the captain just comes over and slaps him. He's like, calm down, like get over it. We're going to be fine. And Leonardo watches this show to encourage his leadership because, you know, he's trying to be leader and stuff like that. Well, I mean, he is only, this is where we really see like Splinter kind of name him leader of the group anyway.
Yeah, they didn't have a leader at the moment. And it was because if you're not going into the field, there's really no point in having a leader. But once they decide they want to go to the surface and Splinter finally gives them the okay, then he's like, all right, you need a leader. I love how that gets picked too, because he's like, I will meditate on it. And then he closes the door and immediately opens it back up and he's like, it's Leonardo.
Yeah.
What was interesting though is like, so the very first scene we see is like they're all kind of like they're sparring with each other. Leonardo loses to Raphael, which I thought was interesting with Leonardo. You know he's going to be the one that becomes the leader, but Raphael seems the better fighter.
It's good because it makes it to where a lot of times if they make Raphael, if he would have lost that fight, I think it would have made him kind of an inferior character, because then it's like, well, what does he have except anger? So right, exactly. giving him that fighting prowess, like, okay, so even though he's too much of a hothead to lead the group, he still has his place here because he is a great fighter.
Michelangelo is exactly what you think. He's always the same, you know, party animal.
Party
he's,
dude.
He's yep. just, yeah, he's party dude. He just wants to have fun. He's the kid, you know? And Donatello, the way they handled Donatello, I think is the best iteration of Donatello I've ever seen. Because to me, Donatello is usually the most boring, because he's he's like the science nerd. I feel like he doesn't get a lot more personality than that sometimes, than just being the brainiac. But in this, he was like a kid who just has a lot of wonder, gets really excited and impressed by things. And he is really smart, but he also is extremely brave and courageous and falls in love and things like that, you know? So like, I felt like they gave a lot more to him than he's ever gotten. And I thought that was a smart move. And the same for Leonardo too, because I feel like Leonardo in the past has been one of my least favorites, because he is usually just he's the straight man, you know? He's like the one to keep everybody else in line. But here, he's very obviously still immature. He doubts himself. He's using leadership tactics that he's learning off TV and just kind of imitating it. And there's a few spots too where he makes jokes and stuff. So he's still, they're doing a good job of showing that they're still kids. They're 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I thought that they handled that great.
In Donatello's case, yeah, they are like they gave him more personality. They laid out, I guess, different sides of his personality, where like you said, he does crush on girls easily, so he has more to him than just doing machines, right? Which is refreshing. And with Leonardo, yeah, like it's funny to see, like, even though he's the serious leader type guy, like he's not always serious. He does joke around and things like that, but he also, when he does it, at the point that we were watching it, at least these first couple episodes, he's trying to make leadership decisions, and he's saying things like, you know, like, let's do this, and making these plans, and it'll zoom in on him, and then it'll zoom out, and there'll be nobody there. Everybody's already left him. Like, nobody respects his leadership yet.
And that happens a few times, even in, like, later episodes, too.
Yeah. Oh, this is also where they first discover pizza, which is interesting.
Yes, that was a great scene.
It was. I didn't think about the fact that they hadn't had pizza yet, because when they were in the lair still, they were eating algae and worms, just made up in different ways.
Right.
And they're turtles, so it's like, it makes sense to that degree, but...
But it's kind of like even out, they were just kind of like, as they're eating it, they're like,
Yeah, they're tired of it. I mean, that's probably all they've had down there in the sewer. So they when they go out to the outside world, finally, like they run across a pizza guy and accidentally scare him. Oh, well, Raphael purposely scares him, and then it makes him like run off and drop a pizza, or drive off on his little bike and drop a pizza. And they pick it up. There's kind of like, what is this pizza or something? I can't remember how they pronounced it, but Michelangelo's like, I'll take one for the team. I'll try it out. I'll see. I'll test it. And he eats it, And it's funny, like, to see his face. And this is kind of has those, like, anime tropes where it, like, does the weird, almost like Teen Titan, like, where it does the stuff where it kind of, their eyes get really big and white. And then they, you know, it'll zoom in on something. So it zoomed in to his head where and shows his brain just exploding after he eats pizza.
Exactly.
In the old cartoon, it's like they just loved pizza always. It's like they had no explanation. It's just like pizza's great, whatever. But in this one, it's like this is the first real food they've tried. So it makes sense that pizza would be their obsession at that point.
One thing that was weird. So it gets revealed Raphael has a pet turtle. And I think that's weird, right? Like, that'd be like us having a pet, like, human, like a little baby in a cage. Like, that's weird, man. That's he's got some problems.
It's a little weird, but it's not an anthropomorphic turtle, so it's kind of different.
Well, okay, so it'd be like us having a brain dead fetus in a cage. No. So, and then they'd be like, oh, well, it's different. And I'm like, no, it's still weird.
I think it would be, I guess to put an equivalent to it, it'd be like having a baby chimpanzee in comparison,
I guess.
I mean, I don't know. If you wanna, you're trying to make it right.
That's kind of a stretch, I think.
A little bit. Oh, we also meet April in this episode. April in this iteration is very young. She's a teenager as opposed to her older reporter self or anything.
I like it, though. I like her being young because I get tired of the, you know, the April O'Neil, who is the news reporter and then has the inside scoop and, you know, can feed the turtles information on everything they need.
Right.
You know, because that's been played out. So, and the April in the comics now is more like this April, like she's not that young, but she isn't, you know, like a huge, like established adult. She's like, the April in the comics right now is probably like real early 20s, like definitely millennial.
Yeah. And this one, it also makes sense because she is Donatello's immediate crush because he's like, you know, she's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. It's like, well, she's the first girl you've ever seen. It's like,
exactly.
Well, still. And so
I think Raphael says exactly that.
Yeah. And he has the exact, I mean, he has the, like an instant crush on her. And that lasts throughout the series, at least to the point where I know of it. And it makes sense that she'd be a teenager because then it's just like, it's not like a teenager obsessing over an older woman. It's just like they're the same age group, so it's kind of making sense in that realm.
Yeah, it does make a lot more sense because I'm like, okay, it's a 15-year-old pining after what's probably another 15-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, the Krangs, like you said, we see in this episode, the second part of this episode at least, where it's these dudes dressed up in like business suits, but they all look exactly the same. And they're completely like emotionless faces, but they're incredibly strong and they don't seem to get hurt easily either.
It's very much Agent Smith from The Matrix, but I like them. At first, I was confused because I didn't know if these were like who these were supposed to be. And at first, I assumed this was the Foot. And I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that they're going like business. Like guys, like, you know, less conspicuous, like that makes sense. And it's cool. And it turns out it's not the Foot. These are robots with Krangs inside of them controlling them.
Yes.
And I'm like, first of all, I was surprised that the Krangs were the first thing the turtles faced. Because I always picture Krang as like, you know, guy pulling the strings that you don't get to for a while. But right off the bat, we're seeing the Krangs and there's multiple of them. And I liked it because it was something I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. And I love the way they talk to each other, like how they communicate is so weird because they not only that don't. I mean, it's a hive mind, yes, but they call each other Krang, too. Like even like numbers, exactly. Like just Krang back and forth.
So the Krangs kidnap April and her father. Her father is a scientist, a lot like the comics, the current ones from IDW. Which I feel like they pull a lot of stuff from the current IDW comics, which I think is a great idea because those comics are fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
So the turtles see this. Most of them don't want to get involved, but Donatello having fallen in love with April is just like, no, we have to save her. And that's what I like about them doing this with Donatello's character, because him being the one that's usually not like this. But he goes to great lengths to try to save her in multiple parts of this story. putting himself in danger and things like that, like doing very heroic things that you would assume would be Leonardo or Raphael instead, but it's Donatello, which I thought was great, and I liked it, and it made me like his character way more than I expected to.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of the depth you were talking about earlier.
Another thing I really enjoyed was, so when the turtles are at a distance or when they're fighting, you only see the whites of their eyes. You don't see their pupils and stuff. And I like that because they look fierce and it looks cool. And I kind of yeah. wish they looked like that all the time.
It's very much like the comics, the yeah. old comics.
Yeah, exactly. And I honestly, I feel like, I don't know, if I were designing this show, if it was going to be that 3D-ish thing, I would have at least done that. Because I really enjoyed that, and I think it was just a cool look, and it made them look much better. But, I mean, whatevs. I'm not in control unless somebody wants to give me a job, please.
But I think, though, it's good that they do it in the, because giving them pupils when they're outside of combat is fine, because then it's like, you know, they're more expressive. They get to, you know, talk with their eyes, basically. And it putting it outside of that when they're in combat does make them look more fierce, and that's something I think continues on throughout the series. So I think it's a cool thing that they change it up, not necessarily stuck one way or the other.
I see that argument. I think if I hadn't seen Spider-Man Homecoming and Deadpool, I would have been against the all white eyes all the time, but they showed that it's very possible to just do that and still make it very expressive.
All right, touche. Yeah, that's yeah, a good point.
Gotcha. You or win. Batman the Animated Series, they did, you know, they did the same thing. He only had the whites. True. And I think yeah. that was the first time that was done, at least in American animation, was Batman the Animated Series. But
The Tick also.
Oh, yeah, The Tick.
So, okay, well, there's a lot of examples, and maybe yeah. you're right.
Can we talk about Snake?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So Snake this guy's hilarious. Is hilarious. It, well, first of all, like, we get intro to Snake as part of, like, the Krang group. And so Michelangelo assumes he is a Krang, and so when he's trying to tell everybody, like, there's robot, like, he's the first one who sees one of the Krangs, like, outside of their suits, and he's trying to explain it in a Michelangelo like way, and no one believes him. And then he runs across Snake, who was the driver of this car with mutagen in it, and so he's like, look, like, I'll show you. And he tries, like, ripping his face off. So sitting there trying to, like, tear his face off, he's like, man, this mask is really glued on there. And he's like, ah, that hurts. And so, like, it obviously disproves his theory. But Snake is just a guy, I don't know, a random thug who's working for the Krangs, or he's just the driver.
Yeah, he was like the only human in that group.
Yeah, but there was a purpose for that. And that was for the sake of showing what mutagen can do. And they find a mutagen canister. And the way this happens is the turtles are trying to infiltrate the Krang lair, or at least one of them. And so they crash a van into it, and this van is still holding some mutagen, splashes on Snake, and it turns him into, or it mutates him into the, like, this big weird plant thing, a weed.
It's like a, yeah, it's like a piranha plant flytrap praying mantis. It's yep. like he's got, like, a praying mantis head, and he's got, I think, the arms, and then he's got the legs of, like, tree trunks, though. But then he also has these long vines coming off of him with these, like, Venus flytrap, piranha plant looking things.
Yeah, and he's got a lot going on.
Yeah, and what I loved about this, when the turtles see this happen, Michelangelo's like, you think he'd turn into a snake?
Yeah.
Because of the name Snake. And I thought that was hilarious. And I think then Mikey names him Snakeweed.
I was just going to say, that's a recurring thing throughout the series. I know this much is whenever something mutates into something, or and they run across a new enemy, Michelangelo is the one who names them.
I like that. Like, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And I just love that they called attention to this in the first place, because it's like all of those old Ninja Turtle toys that people mutated into things that were puns of their names, you know? And I thought that was a really fun way for this show to create new characters, just do whatever they wanted with them and kind of poke fun at what the old turtles used to do. And we're going to get to another episode here soon where they poke fun of the old turtles quite a bit, but this is just part of it. And I thought that was great, and I loved it a lot.
Having Michelangelo name these turtles, because like you said, they have kind of weird ideas made for toys, or they did in the original series. And along with them came these really childish names. So it would make sense that Michelangelo, being the most childish of them all, would be the one to come up with these, you know, weird names for them.
So, like, it comes down to basically, I think they escape, or the bad guys escape with April's dad, but they get April back at least. So that's good.
Donatello literally like dives off of a helicopter to save her.
Yeah, and that's the stuff I was talking about, like how just heroic they made him. And I thought that was really cool because I didn't expect mm-hmm. him to be that good, but he really right. was. So she's safe. And then we end up seeing, I guess there's like a news report that's kind of the news doesn't know what happened, but they saw this throwing star left behind and they showed it on TV and you're seeing somebody watching it and they obviously recognize the star. And then we find out that it's Shredder. And I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah. So, and the second episode we watched for today's show was Transdimensional Turtle, season 4, episode 10. This one was chosen by Chris.
Yeah. So the reason I chose this was because we get the best of both worlds. We get the new turtles and we get the old turtles in one episode. And if you haven't seen this, I strongly advise you to watch it first. And if not, we will go into why this is so awesome and how they even did it.
Yes. So for a short synopsis of this one, in the most cowabunga crossover ever, the 2012 and 1987 Ninja Turtles team up to stop the Krang from tinkering with dimensions.
Yes.
We see actually, and since this is season 4, there's a lot that we've missed in the process, but they actually, like, we open with Fugitoid, who is originally yeah. from the comics, who Dr. Honeycutt. And he is, you know, the turtles are in there with them. We've got April, who's actually wearing a yellow jumpsuit, more of a space jumpsuit because they are in space right now in a spaceship.
Yeah.
And we've got Casey Jones as well. And Casey Jones, just like April, is much younger. Like he's a teenager as well, but he's still got the hockey mask and everything. I like his hockey mask, actually, because it's got a cool skull painted on it. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing's awesome. Like his design mm-hmm. was great.
Oh, yeah. They're talking about this black hole generator that they have to destroy every piece of because of Triceratons, which were also from the 87 series, you know, the big orange Triceratops guys.
Right.
They are trying to, I don't know, make black holes and do, I don't know what they're doing exactly because we didn't hear that part.
Nefarious things, man.
Nefarious things. Yeah. Bad villain things. And then before the intro starts, like the turtles just get randomly teleported away. And we see them like turn into cartoon versions of themselves. And then that's when the intro starts. And it's a different intro where it starts like the normal intro, but then it cuts into talking about how the Triceratons have done such and such. And now they have to stop them. So the Krangs aren't the big deal right now. It's at least in this point in the show, it's right. about stopping the Triceratons from, I don't know, making black holes, doing whatever villain things they're doing.
Yeah, and it's almost like I think this episode's sort of a step aside of that main plot line because we don't see any Triceratons in this episode.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
But it was the best aside ever. It must have been yeah. like a, hey, we got these guys signed on to do this crossover. Let's just do it. And they're like, okay, we'll take a break.
Yeah. yeah.
So the turtles, like you said, they get sucked into this world where everything's 2D in their cartoons. And the old school Ninja Turtles are there, like show up and you hear the old theme song and everything, the old music. And I was like, oh, this is so good. And they all start kind of like fighting each other. But it's like the 87 turtles are trying to get them to stop fighting because they're like, no, we brought you here on purpose. And it's just the banter between the two sides is great, especially Raphael from the 87 turtles, which was voiced by Rob Paulsen. Is making fun of Donatello from the 2012 series Voice, who is also yeah. voiced by Rob Paulsen.
I mean, obviously, you're going to know that they're both Rob Paulsen if you're a fan of the show at all. So that's just a funny commentary that they threw in there.
The 2012 turtles are making fun of the 87 turtles for like, you guys fight and don't even use your weapons. And
yeah, because like they trip people over like their turtle wires or whatever and just use them like yo-yos and things. So it's very playful because the old series, like they had a big thing against using weapons and violence and stuff. So they yeah. had to do things like that as a workaround and they were commenting on them, not even using their weapons. And also when they see Krang, like original Krang come out,
the Pat Fraley Krang. Yes.
Yes. And Pat Fraley was in it too. And you heard his voice and it was amazing.
Best voice ever.
Michelangelo comes in. I love his comment where he's like, you know, who, what's with the gross man baby body? And because that's that's what it looks like. Like, yeah. Especially seeing it in like 3D and stuff when they come back to the regular turtle world. It's like, man, that is such a weird, why did they use that weird body?
Have you ever seen the meme? It's a side-by-side comparison of Krang in the big robot man baby body next to Honey Boo Boo and her mom.
Yes.
Oh my God, it's funny.
Oh, internet. Yeah.
No, thank you so much.
I definitely
have
seen that. So Krang's trying to get home. He's trying to get back to Dimension X because he's been banished at this point for unknown reasons.
Krang opens a portal, gets through it. And I like this too, that they kind of, Donatello in the 87 is kind of a Mary Sue. If they need something to happen, he just whips up a device and it can do whatever they need to happen. And that happens here. He's just like, they're like, oh no, what do we do? And he's like, oh, well, I've got this interdimensional travel gun, and they shoot and go to wherever. And they're just, the 2012 turtles are like, really?
He's like, well, that was incredibly convenient. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, another thing Krang's trying to do is every dimension he travels to, his goal is to try to take the turtles out, but he's basically trying to take the whole dimension out, leaving these dimensionizers behind to blow the dimension up or put it into a black hole or whatever he's trying to do.
So they hop through this dimensional portal and they end up back in the 2012 turtles end up back in their own world. The 87 turtles come with them and God, they look like nightmares. Ugh, they did not, they did not translate well to that world because their eyes are giant and circular and just gross looking. I'm like, oh, sick.
They always look excited and at attention. Yeah,
yeah, I did not like it. But I did love the 2D version of the 2012 Turtles. And I honestly wish that that show had been 2D in that style because it looked fantastic.
That's true. Yeah, it did look really good. This is at least the first time we see Krang Subprime, who is voiced by Gilbert Gottfried. And he is so funny. Like, because he's in a giant robot body, but his head is like a librarian's head or something.
Right.
So I don't know what the origin of that is or how that started, but it looks hilarious now.
And Subprime has like, he's got like the half like metal facing going on, like Cyborg from Justice League.
Yeah, like a cyborg eye. Yeah.
Just makes it look real cool. At some point they're like arguing and a joke is made at the expense of Megan Fox, which is funny because Fox stars in the live action movies as April O'Neil for some horrible reason. But I thought that was cool, making a little jab.
Yeah. Ooh, we actually get to go back to the Technodrome, which is cool seeing that also in the CG world. We find out Krang was banished because he's a big screw up, which makes sense because in the cartoon, he absolutely was. Oh, there's this one scene that I was like it made me like hold my heart for a second, be like, oh, that's awesome. Where Raphael smashes his pizza against the screen.
Yes.
And they're fighting the, some of the Krangs. And he smashes it on one of the robots. But what it looks like from our perspective is how the old intro was where when they say like Raphael is cool but rude, and he smashes on the screen, and then the other Raphael's like, what was that for? Why did you use pizza? And then he's like, give me a break. And that's what he says in the intro too. So I was like, oh man, that's such a cool callback.
Yeah.
For no reason. It's just thrown in there, but it's hilarious.
Right in the middle of a fight, just somehow he has a pizza, hits one of the Krangs with it, and then stops to eat a slice.
Yeah.
That was good. They also end up in a third dimension where this is just the 2012 turtles end up in a third dimension, which is the original comic book world. And we find out that this is like the original Ninja Turtle universe. So this is known as like the Turtle Prime or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was interesting. And they were immediately terrified of the comic book turtles because they were really scary looking.
And I really like the way that they handled the comic book turtles too. They didn't make them like move and they didn't make them like animated and everything. They made it almost like a motion comic. Yeah. Where it's like the scenes were, panels were still there and the turtles were moving kind of across it, but it wasn't like an animation. It was just like kind of a slideshow type thing.
Exactly.
And I thought that was pretty cool the way they did that.
I did like how the very last panel where like, so the 2012 turtles grab that dimensional disruptor or whatever from that world, escape through a portal real quick before the comic turtles or Turtles Prime catch up and disappear. And then the last panel is it's showing the Prime Turtles just looking really confused.
Oh, yeah.
Subprime finds out what Krang was actually doing.
Oh,
he gets
yeah.
super angry and chastises him. He's like, are you a moron? It's because, so I guess all the Krangs are charged with eliminating the turtles from each universe. And I love the idea that the big bad Krang from the 87 was just one of the many Krang. Like, he wasn't anything special.
He was just like a screw up of the
Yeah,
Krangs.
He was one of the many, and he was the worst of them.
he was Invader Zim of the...
Exactly. He was Invader species, Zim. Yeah. That's great. When he reveals that he was trying to destroy those realities completely, Subprime was like, what?
Because
like,
all
why would you
do
that?
They're trying to take over these realities and, you know, convert them or whatever.
Yes.
And then he's like, you're a complete idiot. You're still a screw up. And he just gets re-banished.
And then the turtles play hacky sack with Subprime.
Yeah. Yeah, they knock him out of his robot suit and play hacky sack with him.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think it's the Michelangelos that did.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But let's go ahead and jump into the next episode we watched, which was Requiem, season 4, episode 25. This was the highest rated episode, where Super Shredder has returned with even greater vengeance, forcing the Turtles to enlist the combined aid of Splinter, April, Casey, Karai, Shinigami, and the Mighty Mutanimals to destroy him once and for all.
Shinigami. I was wondering what her name was, because it didn't... I mean, obviously, she's been in other episodes, and her explanation would have been there, but I didn't understand who or what she was supposed to be.
Yeah, I didn't know what she did at all or anything, because she didn't really do anything this episode.
She had a cool design, though, but that was about it. She looked like a witch or something.
Yeah, almost.
Ooh, but, Shinigami means demon, so I bet she is some kind of witch or something.
Yeah, I guess she's just on the side of good, but she's still demon? I don't know. But in this one actually is very cool because it has a lot of references to the end of the first Ninja Turtles movie from 1990. And we'll talk about those as we get there, because that kind of happens towards the end of this episode. But it opens with Shredder talking to Baxter Stockman, who has actually been transformed into a fly at this point. Because I know when it started, he was just regular human Stockman. And I know he got a robot body and stuff. So I don't know what was going on with him in the previous episodes. But by season 4, we see that he's now in his fly form, which is what everybody wants, of course, who'd seen the old cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, that was cool to see.
Yeah, you got to love Fly Stockman. That's awesome. And he's one of my favorite villains from the original cartoons. I just loved his, I loved everything about him. His aesthetic was just cool. And
yeah,
the toy
I love
was
the way
fantastic.
It looked. I still have a toy of him. Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that they're watching that that TV show.
The Chris Bradford and the Two Rough Crew. Yeah, which is obviously fantastic. Like based on the Chuck Norris cartoon, old Chuck Norris cartoon. God, the characters in this were hilarious. Where
I did notice, so one of the sumo guy, aside from his face, his body design was exactly like a character from the old stuff. At least I had the toy. His name was Tattoo. He was like a big sumo wrestler, and like it came with all these stickers, so you could put tattoos on him and stuff like that with the toy. But he looked exactly like that, except it was like. When you looked at his face, it looked like it was like a white guy with glasses and a neck beard or something.
Hey, his voice for whatever reason sounded like Snagglepuss from
Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, from Hanna-Barbera cartoons, where he's just like, "Heavens to Murgatroyd!" Like they're walking upstairs, like they're walking up a 60-something flights of stairs.
Yes,
at Chris Bradford, who is the Chuck Norris of this, and his Two Rough Crew, and Little Renio is this little kid who's traveling with them, because they always have to have a little Asian kid in these old TV shows. You know, yes. He's the flim flam and whatever of these other shows. Man. And so he's like, help him on my back, Little Renio. And he sticks his butt out and he jumps on his back and they go to the rooftop. Little Renio mutates into the giant evil villain and he just jump kicks him and defeats him. And then it's an advertisement for something else. And this is like, less than a 5-minute segment, but it's just hilarious watching through it. That's really what I was talking about earlier with the space heroes.
We get to see in this episode the Mutanimals, like you were talking about earlier before we got into the episodes, And we get to see, like, I mean, there's so many cool ones. We got Mondo Gecko, we got Slash, we got Leatherhead. Those are three of my favorite secondary Ninja Turtles characters from the original.
Mondo Gecko, every iteration of him so far has been cool. Like, even in the comics as well, he is awesome.
It felt a lot like the comics because Slash and Mondo were part of the comic Mute Animals and stuff. And I just like how they were doing this.
Yeah, and Leatherhead was on the side of good. At least he's an anti-hero.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's interesting seeing that instead of like the Bayou guy with the Cajun accent.
Yeah. We also got Karai. We got to see Karai. She's cool. Didn't expect her to be on the side of good.
Yeah, I don't know when that cross or when that like conversion happened. Dr. Rockwell is someone else who was in this. And I don't know. I don't think he's from the original ones at all. Yeah, but he was, like I said, voiced by Frank Welker. And he's essentially like a telekinetic monkey, I guess, who floats like around it. With the big... He's almost like a Mojo Jojo, where he's got that big, like,
thing on his head. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess the whole premise of this one was, like, I'm guessing Shredder was defeated at some point, but he's Super Shredder now, where he's, like... I guess he's used mutagen on himself, and now he's, like, huge and deformed and has spikes, like, ripping out of his skin a la like Wolverine, but like all over the place, and his mask has pretty much become part of his face.
Yeah, so it's not like Kevin Nash Super Shredder from the movie. From this the is like super mutated Super Shredder.
Yes. So he is going after Karai. I don't know who she's supposed to be of his in this show, but in the comics, Karai is it his niece or granddaughter? Who he was kind of grooming to be his, I don't want to say replacement, because I don't think his Shredder successor. Ever thinks he's going to be replaced, but his like second in command at least.
Yeah. And I think it's the same in this show where that's his granddaughter, because when they were doing the training, when Baxter Stockman was doing training with them at the beginning of this episode, like he throws some like level 12, you know, foot soldier robots or whatever at him.
Level 12.
And then he sends a Karai, like a hologram of her him. And he says her name, but then he just like, you know, kills her. And of course, the holograms didn't matter. But then the purpose was to see that the mutagen removed his emotions. And so emotion being taken out of it, like he wouldn't care about killing his granddaughter.
He's going into the Mutanimals base to kill Karai, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He attacks, blah, blah, blah. The turtles kind of come to the rescue. Shredder kind of like makes a run for it. And then the turtles and mutant animals split up and go after, like trying to find out where Shredder went. Some of them end up at a carnival where Bebop and Rocksteady are waiting. They were interesting. I like, I love that they're in it. Rocksteady looks amazing. Bebop sounded great. I don't like his character design that much because he's like half robot, I guess. I don't know.
It's like he's a pig still. So he seems like he would still be kind of a fat dude, but instead he's like this super skinny dude with a pig head, and he's like really sleek and, you know, almost breakdancing and stuff. So it's a, it's an interesting like take.
Rail thin, like anorexic thin.
Yeah. Yeah. Like not just healthy thin. Like this guy is a stick, but and with a pig like, head.
His legs and arms, I don't know if it's his outfit or what, but it, like I couldn't tell if it was clothes or if he was robot, like
or if he was robot. Yeah, I don't know.
It was just weird because it was like lighting up, you know, like it looked like there was neons on his legs and
like,
arms.
I don't know if that was just part of his like eccentric suit or what.
I couldn't tell.
I have questions about Bebop, but
I didn't care for that.
No, I agree. I mean, I'm always going to go for the old, like, dumb Bebop from the show, but or from the old cartoon, but that's fine. That's their choice.
Oh, there's a fish and a werewolf.
The fish is Fish Face, also named by Michelangelo. And then the werewolf dude is actually Rezar from the movie.
That's supposed to be Rezar?
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, he was creepy looking in this.
Uh-huh. I hope that they bring Taka in somehow. I think eventually they will.
That would be cool. I like it.
I think that the werewolf dude also used to be a different mutant, and like a different wolf mutant, and he got mutated a second time. But originally he was Chris Bradford, who was the guy that was in that cartoon show that they were watching.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah, like he was the martial artist, Chris Bradford.
That's hilarious.
That happened like in the first season somewhere where Chris Bradford got mutated into this like other wolf dude, this giant wolf dude. But I think somewhere along the line, he went through a secondary mutation.
It was in this one, it looked like some of his bones were showing, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Like almost like he was decaying, like he was like a zombie werewolf or something.
Yeah, he did look really cool though. He looked fierce.
Yeah, I liked it. Casey Jones had exploding hockey pucks. That was awesome.
Yeah, like it made it make a lot more sense, his character. April is actually almost like, she's telekinetic now.
Yeah,
somehow.
I didn't understand what was going on there. She's got some sort of, April went Super Saiyan, dude.
Yeah, it was almost like if you've ever seen Akira, like she was like Tetsuo from that, like her hair is just raised up and she was trying to fight against Super Shredder and everything. And what I was talking about from the first movie was, so when they go to the rooftop to have a showdown against the Super Shredder at the end,
They are facing off.
Yeah, and Splinter's there facing him. And it's just like the rooftop scene at the end of the first movie where...
Kind of.
Well, I mean, not just like, but
ends up biting the dust.
You've got Shredder who charges Splinter, and then Splinter, you know, throws him off of the building.
Yes.
And he falls in the back of a garbage truck. And then Casey Jones is the one who pulls the lever and is like, oops. And, you know, but in the movie, you know, that's the end of Shredder, at least at that point in the movie. And but in this one, like, that's not the end. So Super Shredder breaks out of it and jumps back up onto the rooftop, you know, unbeknownst to Splinter. And then he comes up behind him and just like stabs him with his, you know, arm claw things throws him off the building. I'm thinking like as Splinter's falling off the building, someone's going to catch him. So everything's going to be fine. But no, he literally hits the concrete and he is just straight dead. Like RIP.
Pour one out for Splinter, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. That was a surprise. What sucked too is because the turtles had split off. So it was like Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo were with, I think, Leatherhead fighting Bebop and Rocksteady. And then they were just getting back when they see Splinter's body flying from the roof. And just like Leonardo screaming was just like, oh man, that hit me in the feels.
Oh yeah. And Raphael and April too, when Splinter gets stabbed.
Yeah. Raphael was like beat to crap, man. He could barely even move.
Yeah. There was a lot going on, and that's, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that lasted or what. I mean, we didn't see him in this episode we watched, the next one we watched. So
he's a dead rat.
Dead rat.
Yeah.
So in the next episode we watched for today's show, it was Yojimbo, season 5, episode 7. And this was chosen by me because we watched one about Usagi Miyamoto or Yojimbo in the 87 series as well. And he's the big, not big, but he's the rabbit samurai created by Stan Sakai. And it's cool. I always like seeing their crossovers. This is something I'd been showing Chris for months before we did this show, where it's like, oh my God, like they're bringing him into the show. Oh my God, they brought him into the show. And so now we have to watch this show for when we do this episode. And so here we are. That's why I chose it.
What was interesting is like when I was a kid, I didn't realize that these were separate properties because Usagi really had nothing to do with the Ninja Turtles.
Right.
They were separate universes. So, I mean, back when they originally did the first crossover, I mean, it was, I mean, to us, it probably wasn't a big deal because we didn't know better, but to fans of the comics and manga and stuff, they were probably like, oh my God, this is insane. This is the best thing ever.
Like the way they handled him in the original series, it was goofy. He had like a rabbity kind of voice. Like it was kind of silly, like the old series was. But in this one, he's awesome. So the turtles are transported to an alternate dimension where they befriend the rabbit samurai and master swordsman Miyamoto Usagi. Yojimbo just means it's the Japanese word for like bodyguard, and it makes sense because that's what he is in this episode. And he's also a ronin, so he's a traveling samurai basically working for whoever he can. It opens with him fighting this like demonic looking wolf dude who I guess killed his entire family.
Yeah, named Jay.
Yeah, Jay, the Blade of the Khans, and he was saying that he destroyed his family because they were infected by evil. Like, that's what he keeps saying, is like he's destroying things that are purifying the place because he's destroying those that are infected by evil, but his views on what's infected by evil seem very twisted. Though we see the new intro also, and I don't know if this is something that's ongoing as of now, but it's called Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles now, and like the old comic books, instead of just Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the intro style is different as well.
Which is cool. I like it. I like the callback to the comics.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's like how it is now as far as season 5 goes, or if that's just a one-off or what's going on.
If there's one thing we've learned doing this show is that decisions are made about the titles of cartoons that make no sense to us. We've ran into that with Batman and this and lots of other shows.
So. If there's anything we understand from watching these shows is that we don't understand a lot about these shows.
Exactly. It's Hollywood, man. It's all run by the reptilians, and they won't have any, like, they don't think the way humans do, so there's no way we're going to know.
Right. We also get another character in this one whose name is Kintaro, but he's an annoying character, I'll give you that, but he's adorable because he's just a little, he's like the golden child, and that's who Usagi has to protect, but he's like a pampered little rich kid, and he's royalty. But he's a little pug kid, and he's so adorable looking. And so I think Michelangelo starts calling him Pugtaro.
Yes, he does.
And now that's his name from then on is Pugtaro, and that's what I'm going to call him.
Yeah, and that kid sucks.
Yeah, that kid
sucks. He's so annoying. I hate him. In one part, he kept talking, and Usagi just shoved a bone in his mouth.
Shove me up with a bone or something like that. Yeah, like, he's just always yelling.
Oh, he's like the Joffrey without like the murderous rage. Sure. If you took the personality of Joffrey Baratheon from Game of Thrones, put it in a tiny pug and made him not a psychopath, that would be Pugtaro, aka Kintaro. Yeah.
Oh, the way that the turtles get summoned in here is by that Jay dude. Like, he uses some turtle charms and brings them in, tells them that Usagi is the evil one, and that's what they have to defeat. But
he kind of brainwashes them, too. Like, yeah, he uses a spell on them.
He uses a spell on them. That turns their eyes white as well.
And cool. Then,
yeah, they come to him. And luckily, pretty quickly, you know, he fights them, defeats them all, and then they're able to get knocked out of their trance and explain to him what's going on. And so then at that point, they're kind of helping him protect Pugtaro from this army that is run by Sumo Kuma, who is a giant bear dude.
Yeah, he was leading. Cool. I was kind of hoping to see Pandacon, and we didn't get to see him. And I was just like, man, they really missed an opportunity to use Pandacon from like the old stuff. But
yes,
awesome. I was looking for him. I was like, oh, dude, it's going to be Pandacon. I'm like looking for him. Never saw him.
I liked the setting of this, though, because it is just like the old samurai movies where it's like in the forest. You've got the just the tall trees. You've got the samurais on horseback. It's basically plays out exactly like one of those old ones would, except with in a Ninja Turtle world. And it was cool seeing them, like the Ninja Turtles get dressed up in their samurai outfits as well with Usagi to infiltrate this base and defeat Sumo Kuma's army. And because they had previously attacked and burnt down the city that Usagi was from.
I like, too, that we get backstory of Usagi, why he's a Ronin. Like, he's not just calling himself Ronin. We actually get to see why. And I liked that story, and I thought it was great. And that just reminded me of several episodes ago, like in the first or second episode, we get to see some backstory about Splinter. And we don't know the whole story, at least it wasn't revealed to me and Joseph only watching these episodes, but like seemed like Splinter had a wife and a child, like a daughter, and that Shredder, I think, murdered them both. At least it seems that way.
Yeah, that is exactly what happened. And that's what happened in the comics, too, except that in the comics, the four turtles were his original
sons.
Children,
yeah.
And they were reincarnated. All of them were reincarnated into these new forms. So it's kind of a different take on it. But it was interesting seeing that he had a family aside from these, and the turtles are then his adopted family, which kind of makes sense.
So I loved getting this. I loved getting background, however short, like at least some sort of story for the motivation on these two. So, I mean, Asagi's being great. Like, I'm glad that they explained it. And I don't know, Asagi is just like, his character was done so well. If he wasn't a rabbit, you would just picture this as being one of those old samurai movies. Like it was done so well.
Probably a lot like Yojimbo, the original samurai movie. What's cool is they also, in his origin story, they use Stan Sakai's original artwork for it from the comics. So that was a really fun way to flashback to that.
Yeah, I like it.
It's obvious these creators, you know, Kevin Eastman and Stan Sakai, have respect for each other and want to honor each other's works in that way. And that just feels good as, you know, someone appreciating these properties.
Well, that's cool too, because their art styles are very similar.
Yeah. The voice of Usagi was John Boyega, who is Finn from Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was picturing like a middle-aged Asian man that, you know, was like originated from Japan or something, because man, his accent was, he nailed it.
I know. I would not have known had I not looked it up. But so they save Pugtaro, and then, I mean, this is an episode that obviously has a continuation to it, because it ends with
a literal cliffhanger.
That's what I wrote down as literal cliffhanger, because they're falling from a cliff. And that's where the episode cuts off. So like we said, literal cliffhanger, and we don't know what's going to happen after that.
And I got to say, even though I think if I remember right, this story has continued over three total episodes. Okay. Even just this first part, which is, you know, 20 minutes of this first part of the story, was 100 times better than the third Ninja Turtles movie. Go back to old Japan too.
Yeah, so it can be done so well, and that's what I mean. Like the story, the writing in this was so great, especially this episode. It made me very happy that they treated these characters with such respect, or at least Usagi with such respect. Yes. That I was just very proud of this episode, very happy about it.
Agreed.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we cook up some algae and worms for our inner kids, bribing them with pizza so they can tell us what they thought of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2012.
I really like this cartoon, even though it looks like a Toy Story version of the Turtles. But they were really fun, and there's so many crazy animals, and Shredder was all big and scary, like, rawr, and he killed the rat, just like my dad does for a living. So I give this cartoon 5 bowls of pizza flake cereal out of 5.
What can I even say about this show, but wow, it's everything I never knew I wanted from a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show. This version hits the sweet spot between serious and comical, where it never leans too heavily on or does disservice to either. As a longtime Turtles fan, it's great seeing a wide variety of characters from the Ninja Turtle universe, homages to the previous movies, cartoons, and comics, as well as a lot more heart than I think was ever captured in any prior animated version. Overall, I'd give Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2012 5 big bowls of Mighty Mutanimals Munchie cereals out of 5, and this is definitely a show I'll continue watching. To honor both the old and the new, I'll close out with this. Kowal Booyakasha! Or wait, maybe Booyakabunga!
Those both sound, you know, pretty awful, so let's not do that again.
Yeah, I apologize for my inner kids.
Your inner kid is grounded. So
yeah, he doesn't get to speak anymore.
So do you have any final thoughts on this show?
Man, I mean, just the ratings alone should say enough from both of us too. So we can both agree this was an amazing show. Art style aside, which we both also agree isn't our favorite, but the story's good enough to where it can hold itself up on its own. And even if you're not like a huge fan of the old stuff, this is definitely one to give a shot, because I think this could change your mind.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. It's obvious I struggle with the animation, but it is fluid. It's smooth. Some of the backgrounds are still very breathtaking. It's just the character design is what I had trouble with, and I didn't care for it all. But that said, I still gave it that rating of 5, because the story is great. The humor and the banter perfectly fit the tone of the original. Plus, there are so many nods and homages to the original and the comic series, that you can tell this show is made with lots of love and respect. So all in all, it's fantastic, and I am absolutely going to watch more.
So, I mean, just to close out, anybody who's listening to this episode, you're listening to our 100th episode. If you've listened to every episode before, thank you, and I'm sorry.
Yes. Because thanks, we feel bad.
Yeah, it took a while for us to get into the groove, but I think that we've hit our stride, and we plan on keeping going for, I don't know, however many cartoons there are out there to watch.
Yeah, there can't be that many, right? I mean, we'll eventually.
We're almost done. I feel like we're at the end of the cartoons.
You know, except for our like request list that's ever growing.
I think people are just making stuff up at this point.
Yeah, there's no way those are real.
There might be like 105 cartoons at most. Whatever
total ever made.
Well, listeners, it looks like our milk supply has now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. And next week, we'll be watching
The Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, suggested by Connor via Facebook.
Sweet. Thanks, Connor. I'm trying to remember which one that is. Is that the newer one or the older one?
I really don't remember. I kind of hope it's the older one because I used to watch that all the time, but I don't know.
I liked the in-between one, but I don't know. I've never watched the older one, so we'll see. I don't know.
I think Sonic Boom is the newer one.
No, Sonic Boom is a newer one, but there's one in between, too.
Oh, so that one's the new.
With, like, an updated art style. So, yeah, Sonic Boom is the new, or there's an older new one that might be this one. I don't know yet.
I don't know what's happening.
Once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth.
A place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.